The best weapon you can have in the Prohibition War is your mind. Fill your head with the knowledge you need by checking out this latest entry in the Russ Belville Show's Reformers Reader.
Today in the Reformers Reader, we are taking a look at the book Living a Life That Matters, a memoir of the Marquis de Lafayette, and the author is joining us by telephone. It's David M. Weitzman. David, welcome to the show.
Hello, how are you?
Well, I'm doing very good. I'm glad to have you on the show today because I'm telling you, our Fourth Amendment rights here is something that we talk about a lot on the Russ Belville Show. Since we're a show about marijuana law reform, our listeners are very familiar with having their rights being violated by police. And your book, Living a Life That Matters, delves a lot into this. And I'm just wondering about your perspective on the drug war and how it's weakened our Fourth Amendment and other civil rights.
Well, the police have an obligation to deal with crimes, but before that they can impose on you, they have to have probable cause to get a search warrant. And if they haven't done that, gone before a judge and stated probable cause, they're not entitled to send drones out or any other means of surveillance. They have to have to show to a judge, who is supposedly a neutral third party, that there is probable cause to believe that a crime is being committed.
Now, do you see though that the application of the law with respect to the drug war, with drug dogs that are essentially, you know, warrants on a leash, and cops claiming they can smell marijuana as a perversion of that principle of Fourth Amendment rights?
Well, that's always a question to be that is going to be resolved in the courts. Obviously, there are cases where the smell of a dog has not been substantiated, but again, it always goes back to a question of evidence and having to show to a judge that the police dog had been trained, that in fact had made an indication that there were drugs present, and that there was a basis for the probable cause. If the police have not done this, and this is the obligation and duty of an attorney to question police about this and cross-examine them, then the case has to be thrown out of court.
Absolutely. Now, let's speak a little more broadly about the Fourth Amendment, because one of the things we've faced as cannabis consumers is an increase in the technologies used to come after it. We mentioned the drug dog, but there's also infrared scanning. There's all sorts of new technological ways that the Fourth Amendment seems to get broken. How can we protect ourselves about this, and what is there to be done?
Well, we can't, because one of the problems is that the technology is moving much faster than the brains of the politicians.
Well, doesn't just about everything.
Yeah. Well, we have cell phones, we have drones, we have thermography, and the politicians, many of them are elderly white males who have not are not really adept at modern technology. I know I have grandchildren that can run circles around me with regard to cell phones and computers and tweeting and all of that stuff. I would say, you know, we have close to 500 people in the federal government. All the state legislatures are vary in terms of the degree of sophistication of their people, but the technology is moving much faster than they're able to cope with, and there's nobody. We're still dealing in a kind of legal system that relates back to an antiquated constitution, an antiquated visions of things that are not in the 21st century. They're still back in the 1700s, 1776. Actually, the Constitution was about 20 years after that, but it just hasn't kept pace, and we have to have laws suggested that of knowledgeable people who can help the legislatures eventually enact the proper laws.
We're speaking with David M. Weitzman. He's the author of Living a Life That Matters, a memoir of the Marquis de Lafayette. And you just mentioned the 18th century, the Constitution, the founding of this country. And for people that didn't get that education in school, who was the Marquis de Lafayette and why is he so important to us in American history?
Well, he was a young 19-year-old Frenchman who didn't know anybody in the 13 colonies. Did not speak English, who decided that he wanted to come over here and help the colonists kick out the British. He was not the only foreigner that came. It was the Baron von Steuben and Thaddeus Kaluski, who was the Polish cavalry officer. There were a number of out-of-work Europeans, because there was peace in Europe at the time, who came over here to help the colonists. But they had one thing in common. They wanted to get rid of the British. And he risked everything. His family, his wife was pregnant when he left. He had a fortune. He was subject to arrest. The King of France had told him that if he left the country to help the colonists, he would arrest them. But he risked everything to come over, and within a month, he had met George Washington. They had become friends. George Washington let him fight in his first battle, and he did an excellent job. And they became such close friends, intimate friends, that they bonded for the rest of the war, and Lafayette was trusted by George Washington. He sent him down to Virginia when the British army was advancing up from the Carolinas to the breadbasket of the country to try to stop Cornwallis from taking over the food supplies that were needed by the Continental Army. And it was thanks to Lafayette, who went back to France and got the king to send a French navy, to send a French army, and siege equipment, where they were able to trap Cornwallis at Yorktown. And the British said, this is too time-consuming, too expensive, it's tying us up, and we still are fighting the French in other areas which are much more valuable, such as in the Caribbean, in Haiti and other places in the Caribbean which were producing sugar. And the colonies were producing nothing more than tobacco and cotton. So they decided, well, we'll grant them their independence.
So is it safe to say that without the Marquis de Lafayette, we might still be flying the Union Jack here?
Absolutely. There's no question about it.
Wow. 19 years old. That's remarkable.
Well, it is, and that's just not my opinion. There are over 30 cities in the United States named for Lafayette.
Mm-hmm.
We welcomed him back to this country in 1824. James Monroe was president at the time. He traveled around at that time in 1824, there were 24 states. He traveled to all of them, and in each of them, he was given a parade and treated like the guest of the nation, which he was. And was the very first person that the United States of America made a citizen.
Hmm.
So this young 19-year-old boy who had helped our country achieve its liberty, was made a citizen of the United States. Only in the entire history of the United States, over 200 years, there were only three people, and he was the first.
Wow. We're speaking with David Weitzman, the author of Living a Life That Matters, a memoir of the Marquis de Lafayette. And Mr. Weitzman's also an attorney with a lot of experience in civil rights. We've got about a couple of minutes here. Can you tell us a little bit about your background in civil rights and how does the current Black Lives Matter and Ferguson and all of these events compare?
Well, there's always something.
Yeah.
It's like a rose garden. You clip some petals and more grow back. And there's always problems. The nature of the problems keep changing. One of my first big cases was representing a young man in the 60s by the name of Abby Hoffman.
Oh, yes.
Who wore an American flag as a shirt. And I was watching Donald Trump gave a talk the other day on TV, and seated right behind him was a man wearing an American flag shirt and an American flag hat. So, you know, that was an old battle that nobody even thinks about it. You go to any beach, you'll see people wearing American flag this or that. In those days, it was a big something. People made a lot of fuss about it. So the issues are always changing. Back in the 60s, we didn't know about drones, we didn't know about cell phones, we didn't know about thermography. So technology changes, the techniques of law enforcement change, of the CIA. We have the whole ways of fighting wars have changed.
Mm-hmm.
We used to have battleships. And basically, with missiles and drones, they become antiquated. We have atom bombs now. And so it makes horses and swords antiquated. We don't use those anymore. So things change, and
I'm sorry, go ahead.
And politicians and the public has to adjust.
Absolutely. Well, there's a lot to be learned here from our history, the story of the Marquis de Lafayette. You can find it in Living a Life That Matters, a memoir of the Marquis de Lafayette by David M. Weitzman, available online and at bookstores across the country. Mr. Weitzman, thanks for joining us, and keep up the good work.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you for having me.
You bet. When we come back, we've got time for an interview with Joy Beckerman. She was at the Normal booth for the Seattle Hemp Fest. She's the hemp expert that we all know and love. And then we'll have Doug McVeigh from Drug War Facts delivering an impassioned speech at the McWilliams stage. Next in the Radical Rant.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. The Russ Belville Show, the National Wildlife Refuge for Marijuana Unicorns.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds,